I do not want to go too deep into this. This is going to like just damage me psychically. Welcome to 10 Cent Takes, the show where we grumble about gimmick covers one issue at a time. I am Mike Thompson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the four-dimensional femme fatale, Jessica Frazier.
I am four-dimensional, and I'll bust you into the fifth dimension if you're not careful. Not you, just like you collectively who crosses my path in the wrong way. That took too much explaining. It was quite a threat.
Oh, man. How are you doing tonight?
I'm feeling verbose, apparently. How about you?
Oh, I can't complain. If you are new to the show, our main episodes drop every other week and provide in-depth looks into interesting moments in comic books and how they tie into pop culture and history. But today is one of our Dollar Bin Discoveries mini-episodes that we do in between those deep dives. Basically, we spend a lot of time rooting through dollar bins at local shops, looking for interesting stuff to talk about, and while a lot of the issues that we find are fun and weird, there may not be enough for us to do a deep dive on them. At the moment, we reserve the right to change our mind and come back later on. Each of these episodes features both of us talking about one random issue that we came across in the dollar bins, and focusing on what it is, what goes on inside it, and why it's interesting. So, Jessica, what have you got for me tonight?
Well, this week, I'm bringing you issue number one of King in Black, Black Panther, subtitled Cathexis. Cathexis? I don't know. It's a weird word.
I read the main King in Black storyline. It was basically like the god of the symbiotes from, like, you know, Venom and Carnage and all that came to Earth in the Marvel Universe. And, like, yeah, it was good. I liked it a lot. Donny Cates wrote a pretty kick-ass story. It's suitably epic and over the top.
Yeah, epic and over the top is absolutely what this offshoot was. And this is an offshoot of that same King in Black series. And I looked it up on Marvel Unlimited because I wanted to see what else was involved. I was like, there has to be something else. This was a single issue offshoot for this particular like branch of this. They had a single issue Namor.
They had a couple of single issue tie-ins.
Yeah, they had some interesting ones. So, but they have a bunch on Marvel Unlimited. So many so that they actually have a guide on Marvel Unlimited to tell you like the universe of that little kind of whatever pocket situation we're dealing with, you know, all of that good stuff. So I'm going to check out the guide, kind of see what, I mean, I'm sure if I just read King in Black and kind of branch off from there, I'll be fine. But
yeah, I don't know exactly when it came out because I read it on Marvel Unlimited at the time that it was rolling out on the app. But the thing is there's a delay. I think it was like their event comic of the summer.
2021 to 2022. Yeah.
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 But yeah, this is a rare issue where we're talking about one that actually was published while our podcast was in existence.
I know, right? We don't talk a lot about newer ones than these dollar bin ones unless we kind of stumble across them. So this issue was written by Jeffrey Thorne, art by Jermaine Peralta, colors by Jesus Abertov, lettered by VC's Joe Sabino, published April 2021. This is a fun little rabbit hole. Like I said, there's a ton of other properties, but for this one, we start off our current comic with T'Challa and Storm holding a resistance against an army of what looks like dragons and other gargoyle-like creatures. And we're very quickly shown that Storm did not make it out of that interaction that she was having with the dragon that she was fighting. So we then cut to Black Panther HQ, where Princess Shuri is engrossed in something she has been working on, and General Okoye is there with her, trying to bring her attention to other matters. And T'Challa enters and begins giving orders to everyone, stating that all of the cities across Wakanda were being affected by the dragons that are infecting citizens. And that they weren't really likely to overpower them with the numbers that they had. it turns out that this infection, you know, like we mentioned, are the symbiotes. So the dragon is spreading the creatures by shaking its wings over crowds of people and effectively showering them with symbiotes, causing mass infection and growing the enemy numbers just instantly. So Shuri, T'Challa, and the general work together to each use a different weapon to defeat the large enemy and eradicate the symbiote threat. But will it be enough to allow Storm to rejoin her love, T'Challa, or is she really dead and lost forever? The issue wraps up the story plot really nicely, but it still leaves us with that cliffhanger when it comes to our favorite X-Men. He basically kind of like shakes off the symbiotes using powers and they kind of all get blasted away. But it isn't verified whether she died or whether she had been infected and also was relieved of the symbiotes with everyone else and is going to rejoin them. That is not established at the end. So we don't actually know that kind of going into it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they explore that down another road or what, but I thought that was an interesting kind of place to leave it, considering it's a single issue.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about this issue, because it was really neat. Again, I hadn't read the series prior to this one. That really didn't matter to the story plot, because you could jump in pretty easily and figure out what was happening. If you had any basic knowledge of, like, Venom, Carnage, anything of that, you would know who all of these players are, really, if you know anything about Marvel, I felt like. So it was pretty easy to jump in. I thought the story was good. I really liked seeing the symbiotes. The crossover was really neat. I knew exactly what was going on when we first caught the initial glimpse of this snaky tongue and some teeth. I was like, motherfucking symbiotes are here. And I was right, which is always nice. We also get to see T'Challa dealing with grief as we see him moments after Storm is, you know, we think lost to enemy forces. We get to see the internal struggle of him trying to push back the memories of seeing her for the last time and what he thinks were like her dying moments to like deal with the now. So it does like a couple flashes where you can tell he has to like pull himself out of that flashback and deal with the present so that they could take care of like the current issue. The art was super neat. The dragon was hella cool. The combo of the symbiote and the Wakandan was a neat fucking look. At one point, Shuri gets crossed over and her, like, they do like a full page spread of her and it's just like fucking sick as hell. That's great. So cool. Yeah. So that was really neat. So if you want to see some cool art, definitely check it out. So I'll be delving more into this side of things.
Yeah, that whole run was really fun. It's now been probably about 2 years since I read it, give or take. But I remember really enjoying it. And there was a Savage Avengers crossover or, you know, like tie-in as well, which I think it was Conan and Deadpool fighting.
Oh, cool.
Fighting the symbiotes, too. So
love
they
that.
Did some cool stuff with it. It was really neat.
Yeah. I love a good crossover, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's a good one. I like it.
Well, that's all I've got for us today. What about you, my friend?
So this is another book that you gave me around Christmas time. It's part of the pile, which has been continuing to just, you know, give and give.
They reproduce on their own. I have decided. They really do.
Yeah. One of the comics that you gave me is The New Titans 100. It was published in June 1993 by DC Comics. I know why you got it for me. It comes with a holofoil cover because it's the 100th issue and so they were trying to make it all shiny and flashy.
Yeah.
It was written by Marv Wolfman. It was penciled by Tom Grummett and Bill Jaska and inked by Rob Lee, Al Vey, John Statema, and Stephen George. And this issue is a lot. It starts out with Beast Boy unconscious underwater. He is apparently, I don't know, drowning in the ocean. So clearly this is the aftermath of a battle. He is drifting down, he hits the seafloor, and then a shadowy figure approaches and reaches out towards him. And then we immediately cut to Starfire, aka Corey, and Nightwing, aka Dick Grayson, arriving at the mansion, I guess, that the Titans are operating out of. I don't know. My knowledge of the Teen Titans is very basic. Like, I've watched a lot of cartoons with the kids. Like, I've watched, you know, Teen Titans Go to no end. But the problem is like anyone outside of that core group, I don't know a lot about or where they operate out of if it's not Titan's Tower.
Totally.
So anyway, Corey and Dick are super excited and they're looking for their friends to share the news that they have gotten engaged. And the rest of the team arrives and they're like barely standing. They reveal they barely survived an encounter with the Brotherhood of Evil. They think that Gar has died, but then he is carried in by Aqualad. And Dick decides that this is the perfect time to say that he liked it enough to put a ring on it. And so it's like everything is forgotten.
Jeez,
and also
Louise.
Everybody's in wedding mode. It's ridiculous. So the next scene we get is at City Hall, where Dick and Corey are dealing with some clerk who almost denies them a wedding license because something about Corey being an alien and how her alien blood won't pass a blood test. And then Dick like has some anger issues and he like straight up bodily threatens the dude before he explains that their cohabitation for years will bypass the requirement. And then we wind up at the estate where everyone is setting up for the ceremony. There's some pre-wedding friction between mainly Dick and anyone who gets in his way. Like I said, anger issues. He's the groomzilla, I guess. I don't know. Like, and then we're at the wedding. Like, it's just, it's breathless. It's like, bam, bam, bam. We don't get exactly a great look at who's attending in the audience, but we do see Alfred and Tim Drake, who was the Kurt Robin at the time, hanging out. We don't see Bruce Wayne, which sort of makes sense because this issue came out like a month before Bruce Wayne had his back broken during the Nightfall crossover event. So I guess he was kind of busy. And then,
good, because I fucking hate Bruce Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the officiant gives some speech, you know, and then he's about to pronounce Dick and Corey man and wife. And then we get the greatest moment ever, which is a full page image where he is straight up vaporized out of nowhere. And then and this is where we get into the action sequence. Raven, who is now evil, and we know she's evil because her skin is kind of reddish and she is wearing black dental floss as a costume.
Oh, yep. There it is.
Yep. She crashes the ceremony along with this kind of like wish version of Nightwing known as Deathwing. I had no idea who he was. I looked him up. It is the most egregious 90s trash tropes about like a time displaced sleeper agent who was implanted with Dick Grayson's memories. I don't care. I gave up. My eyes crossed and I was like, I'm out. Sorry, guys.
Jeez Louise.
And this is where the art shifts from Tom Grummett to Bill Jayzka, and the difference in style is so sharp and bonkers. Like there is no similarity between the two, and it's just whiplash. Like it feels so jarring because there's no moment that kind of justifies the shift. It just happens between one page and the next.
Yeah.
Grummett's art is very polished. Like he was also doing art for Adventures of Superman. Like he was working on Reign of the Superman at the time, that big crossover where Superman died and came back. And Jayzka's art is, it's good, but it's very stylized and very angular. And the shift does not work. So Raven is, I guess, possessed by her father, Trigon, who's a demon, or she's acting as his agent. I don't quite know what's going on because I, again, don't have a lot of knowledge outside of this issue. But she basically kisses Starfire and plants what's called like a seed of Trigon into her by like with this kiss. It's very weird and like very kind of like faux lesbian erotic. It feels very strange, especially considering the tone of the rest of the issue. And then she bounces because she's accomplished her mission. Then in the aftermath, Star Lab shows up and takes Corey away to help her recover. And I guess they're not married because, you know, they didn't get to finish the ceremony. And then finally, we get an epilogue in Washington, D.C., where Green Arrow's old sidekick Speedy is at the office of Sarge Steele, who is part of the Checkmate organization. And Checkmate was this like clandestine government org that dealt with metahumans and such. Like they were tied to Suicide Squad and things like that. So Sarge Steele says Speedy needs to take over running the Titans from Nightwing, or Checkmate is going to shut the Titans down because I guess the Titans are a part of the government or something. I don't know.
Mm.
And then after that, we get a number of pinup pages of the Titans, many of which are pretty cute. There is a swimsuit pinup image, which is kind of funny, of all the women of the Titans. But yeah, this is a garbage issue. Like, it is. Oh, man. It feels like the definition of something that just got slapped out with no real goal other than to sell lots of issues or as many as they could. Like I said, you know, Grummet's art is a pretty nice highlight just because he's so good. I will say I also appreciate that there were a number of mullets in this issue and that we see several male Titans rocking noticeable body hair. Like Dick Grayson shows up at one point and he's wearing like a short sleeve dress shirt and he's got like arm hair. When Beast Boy shows up, his suit's all torn and you can see body hair underneath that. It's, yes, you know, something I came to appreciate. I was like, yeah, all right. But other than that, this is not something I would ever recommend to anybody. Like,
uh-oh. Sorry.
Oh, no. This is like, it's hysterical. I was just like, what is going on?
Man.
It's,
I feel like I really, really did a number on you there. Sorry.
It's all right. Like, you know, you should never apologize for giving me comics. Even if it's objectively not a good comic, I will have a good time talking about it.
Oh, good. That's wonderful. Wonderful to hear.
But yeah, that is it for us this week. We will be back next week with a full-length deep dive. We don't know what it is. We're at the point where we are recording the Dollar Bin Discovery episodes a month or two ahead of our regular episodes.
Yes.
But until then, we will see you in the stacks. All right.
Thanks for listening to 10 Cent Takes. Accessibility is important to us, so text transcriptions for each of our published episodes can be found on our website.
This episode was hosted by Jessica Fraser and Mike Thompson, written by Mike Thompson and Jessica Fraser, and edited by Jessica Fraser and Mike Thompson. Our intro theme was written and performed by Jared Emerson Johnson of Bay Area Sound. Our credits and transition music is Pursuit of Life by Evan McDonald and was purchased with a standard license from Premium Beat. Our banner graphics were designed by Sarah Frank, who you can find at lookmomdraws.com.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, ask us questions, or tell us about how we got something wrong, please head over to 10centtakes.com or shoot an email to 10centtakes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, for now. The official podcast account is 10 Cent Takes. Jessica is Jessica Witha, and Mike is Van Sau, V-A-N-S-A-U. We're also on Hive, Mastodon, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. The complete list is in the show notes.
If you'd like to support us, be sure to download, rate, and review wherever you listen.
Stay safe out there.
And support your local comic shop.